All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Thanksgiving week edition. In fact, Thanksgiving Eve as I record this on a Wednesday night. Out by the pool, got some family in town, so I'm outside. I usually record when no one's home, but there's everybody home now. So if it sounds like I'm talking in a hushed voice a little bit, that's all it is. But it's kind of nice out here, and the wind's blowing, the water in the pool's rippling a little bit. And we got Buccaneer football for the first time in a couple weeks, coming off the bye week. First of all, happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I didn't do a show last week, so I wanted to do one this week. I know it's a holiday, maybe people's listening patterns are different, but whether you're listening on Thursday or Friday or Saturday or before the game on Sunday morning, whatever it is, hope you're having a great holiday weekend, and it's always a time to give thanks, and we have much to be thankful for, at least in the department of our fair football team. I would not have said that before the season if you had told me this would be a 5-5 team coming out of the bye week. None of us would, right? We all would have been terribly disappointed to hear that. And yet, with a little bit of perspective and a two-game winning streak, it doesn't seem so bad. But more importantly than just the two-game winning streak, I feel like something happened two Sundays ago on the field in Munich as the Bucs come back stateside now and get ready. They're traveling to Cleveland on Saturday, where they'll play on Sunday at 1. I think they are at a crossroads as maybe not necessarily a team, but certainly as an offense. And it goes back to what happened in the Seahawks game. So, and I'm not going to talk a ton about that game because it already happened and a full week has passed, but when they beat the Seahawks, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before, what did you notice? And we've talked about all kinds of different things about the offense on this show. I noticed plays developing. I know you're going to say the obvious thing. Well, I noticed the running game. Yeah, I noticed that too. I noticed Rashad White showing out a little bit. And I think it's pretty clear. I know Leonard Fournette's probably not thrilled about it, although he's kind of nursing a hip thing still. But if nothing else, first of all, they're going to need both of those guys. And we saw what Leonard Fournette provided down the stretch during the Super Bowl season 2 years ago. And there's no reason to think he can't be relied on to provide that same type of spark again after some bumpier times in the middle of the season. So he needs to get the hip thing right. And in the meantime, I think everybody's fine with seeing what Rashad White can do with a little more of an increased workload. He did a great job with it against Seattle. And the running game as a whole was a lot better. But here's what else I noticed. I noticed plays developing. I noticed the Buccaneers giving it more than 3/10 of a millisecond for pass routes to be run and to develop and to throw the ball. I noticed a pocket, like Brady actually getting into a pocket situation where instead of playing hot potato with the ball and taking the snap and immediately throwing it as fast as he could, stuff was able to kind of simmer a little bit and they went downfield a little bit more. In fact, his average depth of target was over 8 yards, which was the deepest he's had this season going into that game against the Seahawks. He was 29th out of 35 qualified quarterbacks in depth of target, which is basically how far downfield are you throwing the ball, not counting run after catch and all that stuff, just where are you throwing the ball to your receiver down the field. And of course it was 29th out of 35. I'm actually surprised it was that high, given what we had seen from the offense all these weeks leading up to Seattle, because the Bucs never gave it a chance, even when the protection wasn't that bad. They were just throwing the ball so quickly. So I noticed that. And you saw the offense start to get chunks. And chunks are how you move the football. I mean, it's always great when you can have a 12, 13-play drive or something like that that takes off 6 minutes and goes 75, 80 yards. Sure, fine. But realistically, the best offenses, the ones that amass points rapidly and efficiently, they get their yardages in chunks, 12 yards, 15 yards, hey, here's 20-something, whatever it is. The Bucs were finally doing that against Seattle. So what you saw was more along the lines of what we were used to seeing the past couple of seasons from the Bucs offense and what we expected to see from the Bucs offense this season and had not seen really at all, even in the games they had won until now. So here we are, and this is what I mean by the team being at a crossroads. I'm not saying it's as simple as deciding, hey, we're going to be better now, so we'll just start doing better because we decided to do that. I know it's not like that. But philosophically, they allowed themselves the opportunity to be much better against Seattle with the way they ran their offense. And it all works hand in hand. Of course, I know some of you might say, well, the running game, that's what the play action was working. And you're right, the play action was working. They ran 7 play action passes, all of them from under center, none out of the shotgun. and they were 6 of 7 on those play action plays for 74 yards. That's 10.5 yards per attempt. Phenomenal, okay? And play action works, folks. And I have never said that it hurts to have a bad running game. I don't think, and I know you don't have to have a solid running game for play action to be effective, but it certainly isn't a bad thing. And they had it all going on Sunday. And that, you know, I know they only scored 21 points. Obviously, they took some points off the board with that horrific interception on the Fournette pass to Brady, which was there the first time they lined up in that formation. But then, obviously, they tried to do it again, and Seattle was a little bit more hip to it. So, fine. I mean, you know, stuff happens. But my point is, even though the point total didn't necessarily look that different from some of the games that they've played that we regarded the offense as a failure, this was very different the last game. And so that's where we're at now, and that's what I'm looking to see more of as the season progresses. This week may not be the best week for it, honestly, because what you've got with Cleveland, first of all, well, two things. Cleveland is a much better pass defense than they are a run defense. You can run the ball on Cleveland. They give up something like 135 yards a game rushing, whereas their pass defense is a little bit better. On the second thought, too, the weather, and it's only, again, I'm doing this on Wednesday, this show, weather forecast change and things like that. As of now, for Sunday at 1 o'clock in Cleveland, upper 40s, possibly rainy, not ideal throwing conditions, and when you're going up against a team that doesn't defend the run anyway, you know, I definitely, and knowing Byron Leftwich's predilections, this is definitely a game I could see them not necessarily airing it out. That's fine. You know, you do whatever, I mean, we'll see how it actually goes once they get out there on Sunday, but you do whatever's necessary. But I still hope they kind of try to build on what happened in the Seattle game. And they've got a couple things going for them. One, they were able to do it against Seattle, number one. Number two, they're coming off a bye week. Number three, don't discount what injuries have meant to this team offensively and with continuity. And, you know, you look at, like, the receiving trio of Evans, Godwin, and Julio Jones. And Julio Jones had the touchdown, of course, and just generally had a presence in that game that he hasn't really had since week one against Dallas. And this wasn't the only time those three have been together since week one, but this was the first time that the Evans, Godwin, and Brady trio played together in back-to-back weeks. Now, I'm not there with the Bucs. I don't run their practices. I don't know what kind of, you know, after-practice stuff they do with running routes and just the general continuity. But that is a big difference maker, okay? Having all those guys hurt, or in one case, Evans was suspended for that one game, but somebody's in, somebody's out. They never have gotten a chance to really get the rapport going, really get the reps going, really get the repetitions or get the muscle memory, all the things that you just go through the motions over and over where it gets to be second nature. They haven't had that. But the offense is finally, you know, healthy, first of all, and second of all, had a chance to put it together in consecutive weeks. Now you've got a third consecutive game where all three of those guys will be out there, plus you're coming off of a bye week, which will help a lot. And again, I know the weather situation in Cleveland, but it's still something to keep an eye on. This was their second best offensive day by DVOA against Seattle. It was their number one in terms of the passing offense. And, I mean, I've said it before, like, they're not going to get out. I don't care how good the defense plays, and the defense has played well, but I don't care how well the defense plays. You cannot win football games the way you did in the late 90s and early 2000s. The league isn't built that way anymore. You can't, even this year, offense is down, okay? Like, it's not the same. It feels more like the late 90s, early 2000s across the league. I think I read somewhere that fantasy points, not that this is the only barometer, but it tells you something, fantasy football scoring in general is down 25%. All kind, everything, yards are down, touchdowns are down, everything's down offensively. Every game you turn on feels like it's 14-10, and that used to be the score at the end of the first quarter to a lot of these games, and now it feels like that's the score in the fourth quarter. So it's not the same, but you still need to, again, amass points quickly and efficiently to win football games in the NFL, and the Buccaneers didn't seem to want to do it that way for a lot of the weeks coming up until the game in Germany, and, you know, even, like I said, the games they won, it didn't feel that way. So the crossroads is now. Is that the team you want to continue to try and beat? You saw more of what they can be with what they did against Seattle. I'm looking for that against Cleveland. You know, the matchups may not dictate it as much. The weather may not dictate it as much. Cleveland for their part up front. You know, Myles Garrett is going to be on that, our left, his right side against Donovan Smith. And Donovan Smith played better, to his credit. That one concerns you a little bit, though. And Myles Garrett concerns you no matter who's blocking him. On the other side, Clowney, their left, our right side, against Worf's. No, I'm not worried about that at all. But we'll see how the weather turns out and things like that. And Cleveland's a team. They have lost 6 of 7 since a 2-1 start. The defense has been a big reason to blame for most of that. Jacoby Brissett, their quarterback, has actually played pretty well. Amari Cooper has had a resurgent season. I know Brissett's playing. I think this is his final game, right, until Deshaun Watson is allowed to come back. And I think he's Brissett, I saw him on Twitter with a quote saying he knew the deal coming in, thinks he's represented himself well. And he has. And, you know, looking down the road at other teams that need quarterbacks in the situation, you know, Jacoby Brissett's a name you wouldn't want to necessarily ignore. That's for another time, though. As far as this week, you know, that's what the Bucs have to go up against. And so we'll just see how it goes. As far as other injuries, I told you about Leonard Fournette being out there and in practice, and he was, you know, nursing the hip, but he was out there today, and this is earlier on Wednesday, if you're listening to this on a different day. Lou Gehrke is back. Do not worry. Nick Leverett has been, Bowles has already said, Nick Leverett is still going to be the starter, so no problem there. But he's back, and injury-wise, the Bucs aren't in too bad of a shape. Of course, you would expect a team coming out of their bye not to be in too bad of a shape. But, you know, I want to see this team philosophically make, and not that they have to do anything for me, but I basically want to watch these games and feel like they want to score points as badly as I want them to score points, which has never been a problem under Brady before, but this season it has. I felt like I'm watching these games. Do they even care if they score enough points here? Are they just trying to win this game 16-13? Like, that's what it's felt like. And I want more urgency in the offense. And, you know, to do that, you have to give pass routes and passing plays time to develop. And you have to take a little extra time. I get Tom Brady maybe not wanting to put his body at risk, and the longer he holds the ball back there, of course, the more at risk it is. I get that. I'm not the one that has to stand there looking at Myles Garrett with a head full of steam lined up, you know, 5 feet from me, ready to try and take my head off. So it's easy for me to say. I get that. But that is what it takes. I mean, it takes the ability to let pass routes develop. It takes the ability to give your quarterback time. And the Bucs' offensive line has done a pretty good job of that. In fact, if you go to joebucksfan.com, you know, there are articles, and I was reading one of them scrolling through the Twitter feed, and there was, you know, if you look at the offensive pass blocking, the offensive line overall is done actually not acclaimed, but you go through the comments section on some of these Joe Bucks fan articles, and you'd think it was the worst offensive line in the world, particularly pass blocking. It is not. They've been not only okay, but above average pass blocking. I know the run game struggled until the other day with Rashad White. And, you know, again, there's still going to be a place for both those guys, but you could see it with White. Just the little subtle cuts, not even like the really obvious stuff, but just, you know, you take the ball, a hole closes up, there's maybe a cutback lane here and there, and he just kind of seamlessly, he's just a little more shifty, a little more explosive right now. And that doesn't mean Leonard Fournette isn't going to have a role, but, you know, it's overdue what we saw from Rashad White the other day. So, and now, you know, Giovanni Bernard's back off injured reserve. They can activate him if they want to anytime in the next few weeks. We'll see when that is. I know Keshawn Vaughn's probably, you know, I think he was on the trading block. They're saying, hey, we'd be willing to move him. So he's probably run his course, but he's there too. But it's Rashad White's show in the backfield for now. Hey, that could change, though. You know, injuries or just he could get cold. With running backs, I tell you this all the time. It's not that they're not important. It's that you can't predict their performance based on where they were drafted or how you acquired them. And it's just kind of random. And the same with the running game. I never said the running game didn't matter at all. I think there's too much emphasis placed on it by old school football people. But of course you want to be able to run the ball. I mean, I'd rather get 6 yards when I hand the ball off than two. And having a good running game, while it is overrated how much it affects the play action game, it does help keep a pass rush honest. And that was another thing that helped on Sunday, or the last, you know, game, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before against the Seahawks. So going to Cleveland now, and there's one other thing. I don't know if you guys heard, but I guess somebody snuck in to the stadium in Cleveland, which I've been to Cleveland. I've walked around the outside of their stadium. I've never been inside. It was, you know, believe me, anytime I go I dropped my pen there. Sorry about that. Anytime I go to a new city, I always try to sneak into the stadium. It's just automatic. And some are easier than others. Cleveland's was pretty well locked up when I was there, which is why I was surprised to read the story you may have seen this week that someone got on the field with their car, drove their car around the field, did some damage. They're saying it's superficial, it's not that bad, and they're going to fix it up before Sunday, which I'm sure they will. But they don't know who it was or anything like that. I don't know if they did donuts or just drove around. I can tell you, and I'm 42 years old now, I wouldn't do something like that now. But I have done something similar, although I didn't go on the field. When I was in college at UF, and for those of you that have either gone to UF or have visited Gainesville, visited the campus, you know, where the swamp is right there on University Avenue, where the north end zone is, the main street. But running down the west side of the stadium is an old street called North-South Drive. It's now called Lemoran Drive. But North-South is where one of the main stadium gates was, and there was a ramp right from the street, and you could drive into the stadium. And it was open back in 1999, 2000, I'm trying to think what year this was. This was probably 2000 or 2001, because I graduated UF in 2002. And one night, me and my buddies were out driving around in my Pontiac Grand Am, which I think was a 1995 or 96 Pontiac Grand Am. I can't remember. That was my first car, though, and I had it in Gainesville. And we're out driving around, and speaking of hoodlums, you hear the motorcycles go by. They race. But anyway, I'm not an alcohol guy. In fact, I've never been drunk in my life, and I was not drunk on this night. I was just a goofy college kid that did stupid stuff for fun, which I still kind of am at heart. So we're like, hey, dude, we're driving around campus like 1 in the morning. Let's go in the stadium. Nobody's around, you know? So we just pulled off of North-South Drive, right up that ramp, which is the same ramp you enter as a fan, you know, on foot when you're going to the game. And we drove into the stadium. And we didn't go on the field, but I drove through every single concourse. I basically drove the car through the entire stadium. Like, I drove on the concourses. I drove up the ramps to the upper deck. I drove the car everywhere just because I wanted to be able to say my Pontiac Grand Am has been inside the swamp. This was before cell phones and cell phone cameras. I wish I had had it, you know, at least some documentation, like a picture or something. I don't have anything like that. But we did that. And it was fun as hell. It's one of my favorite memories from college. Again, didn't do any damage. That's my thing. I will always trespass. I trespass all the time. I like to sneak into stadiums, houses under construction. My son, he's young. He likes to look at them whenever we're riding by. Can we see when he wants to go look at it? So, yeah, we're those people. But just like a golf course, always leave it in the same or better condition than when you found it. So it didn't do any damage. But somebody did do some damage to the field. I'm not worried about it with Cleveland, but that's just another thing to watch, especially because it's supposed to be really wet and mushy, and you know, we'll see how the weather ends up being. You know, still 4 days out, the forecast can change a lot and things like that. I remember, I snuck in to Raymond James Stadium when it was under construction, the construction site, and we got picked up by a security guy. I was 16, I think, at the time, and that's the beauty of being 16 is you can do stuff like that, and no one's going to make a big deal. If I did that now at age 42, like, you'd be in jail, you know, like, what's this guy doing? When you're 16, I was like, ah, kids, you know. So the security guy picked us up and, you know, kicked us out, but nothing happened. But I remember going into Raymond James Stadium when it was under construction and actually walking up into the light towers, like the staircases, that if you look at the upper decks where the light towers are, you can walk up the stair, or you can't do it now because they have, like, locks on it. But when it was under construction, you could just walk right up there. And we took a VHS video camera, because, again, before cell phones. And I still have that footage somewhere. If I can get a hold of that, I'll post it on my Twitter feed or something like that. Anyway, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, if you want to. And speaking of Twitter, same thing, @bobbygameday. It's BobbyGameDay, @yahoo.com. On Twitter, I always love hearing from everybody if you want to get the emails. I know when you guys email me, I will email you back. Sometimes I'm bad with email. I'm slow. Email has kind of become like the new voicemail. Like, if you email me, it's like, okay, I'll get back to it, but couldn't that have been a tweet? It's a lot easier, you know? Same with like, tweeting is like texting, whereas emailing is like leaving a voicemail. I'll get to both, but much easier with the Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. But there's a few emails from people that I still haven't responded to. I'm going to get to you guys. And it's not because I'm that busy or anything. It's just because I just am not great with my email. But a lot going on this week, all over the place. I know this, you know, obviously the Bucks are back in action, but you get the three Thanksgiving Day games, which by the time you listen to this show, they may have already happened. really looking forward to having good Thanksgiving Day games. It's nice. It's nice when the Lions aren't just a completely atrocious team and when they have a good opponent, which both things are true in this case, because they're not horrible and they're playing the Bills. So that's like an interesting game. And I love the 12:30 start instead of 1. Just give me that extra half hour. And then, of course, the late game Cowboys-Giants, then primetime, then World Cup, which, listen, I'm not a huge soccer guy, but I love the format of the World Cup. I love that every 4 years, it's not very often, I can get into it. Even though I have some scruples about soccer and I complain, I think the offsides rule is terrible. I think any sport where it's like impossible to score a goal and these guys can't score to save their own life and every game is like 1-0 or 1-1 or 2-1, to have a goal, to have a rule like offside that completely stifles offense is ludicrous. But, of course, whenever I say to all the soccer people, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. I do know what I'm talking about. You don't have to be a soccer fan to be able to see it. There's no point. And people say, oh, the cherry picking. We can't have cherry picking. Let me tell you something. If they go, oh, well, football, if we try to change rules about football that we don't know anything about football, you'd get upset too. If every football game was 10-6 or 6-3, you better damn believe I'd be the first one trying to make some changes. Christ. You get these teams, oh, they dominated play in a 1-0 win. If you dominate, you should win like 4-1 or 3-0. You know, you score a ton of goals. It's too hard to score. And you see goals getting taken down. But anyway, point is, I like the World Cup. And even though that belongs in the summer, it's kind of neat having it now during the holidays and having it during football season. So, like, for example, Thanksgiving Day, you got soccer starting at 5 a.m. if you're into that. 5 a.m., 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m. Football starts at 12:30. There's three games all night. There's college football with the Egg Bowl. Then on Black Friday, we got not just soccer, but the Team USA playing against England. That leads into Florida State, Florida, which is on a Friday night for the first time. And let me just say a little thing about Florida State, Florida real quick. I know, you know, this podcast is mainly about the Bucks, but it's really about sports, and I always reserve the right to talk about whatever I want. I grew up in a family that is a big Florida State family. I ended up going to UF, but point is, the Florida State-Florida rivalry is a very personal one to me, and the reason these rivalries are so much fun is because how close everybody is. There's so many split families, there's so many split marriages, there's so many split friendships where one group of buddies went to UF, one group of buddies went to FSU. I have that. I have like an FSU group of buddies and a UF group of buddies. And everybody, you know, there's so many just relationships, whether it's work, friends, family, you know, husbands and wives and all that stuff. The closer you are together, the better these rivalries get. That's why, you know, even Florida-Georgia, which is a great rivalry, I don't even know that many Georgia people because they're in Georgia. And there's Georgia people in Florida too. But Florida State, Florida, it's got its tentacles in everything. And so nowadays that game isn't what it used to be. I've always hoped it could be again. But the Florida State-Florida football rivalry in the 90s shaped who I am as a sports fan. And if you were there, if most of you people listening are old enough to probably remember it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They played, listen to this. This is ridiculous. In the 1990s, the decade of the 90s, Florida State and Florida played 12 times. They played once every year, home and home, alternating, and then they played two more times in bowl games. So they played 12 times in 10 years, and all 12 of the games, both teams, not at least one, but both teams were ranked in the top 10. That is not happening. I know Florida State, Florida doesn't rank, if you said rank the best rivalries in college football. You know, people talk about Michigan, Ohio State, which is going to be great this weekend. People talk about Army, Navy. People talk about Auburn, Alabama, and those are all great. But none of those rivalries have that or will have that anytime. So it's just, I can't even believe it happened when it did. But it was so cool to grow up and be basically age 10 through age 20, all the way through when I went to college. And even now at age 42, I can't tell you the score of the Florida State-Florida game last season or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. I have no idea. I would have to look it up. But if you ask me the score of any Florida State-Florida game from 1988 through about 2009, without even looking it up, I could tell you the score to every damn one. I could tell you where I was when I watched it. It felt like the fate of the world was resting on those games. And now that I've gotten older, I've realized that, I mean, definitely the games were bigger back then, but I've also realized that everything seems bigger when you're 16 or 13 because you don't have as much going on in your life. And so I always say, oh, I miss it. I wish it could be that way again. But even if it was that way again, it still wouldn't be that way again because I'm at a different point in my life. And, when you have kids and all this other stuff, But for my son, I mean, he's 11. He's just now at the age I remember being when I really started to get into college football. And, I wish, and maybe it'll happen. And Florida State's, where they rank 16th. And I like it, by the way. People think, I want Florida State to go 0-12 every year. No. I want Florida State and Florida both to be 11-0 when they play every year. That's my dream, Florida to win, of course. But that's when it's fun. And Miami, too, for that matter. And, a lot's changed since then. But that's Friday night, so that's going to be a lot of fun and probably more fun for FSU people than Florida people. But still, I don't care how bad the Gators are in any given year or how bad who or whatever or if both teams run right. That game is still special. It's its own thing. It'll always be special. And it always falls on Thanksgiving weekend, which I also like. I had a lot of great memories with my dad and my uncle watching that game, my grandmother. And they were all big FSU people, like I said. Now that I'm a UF person, it is what it is. But it's still fun. That's what makes it fun. So you've got all that going on. So for all the things that we all thanks to give thanks for, and sports is only a small fraction of that, but since this is a sports show, that's what I'm thinking about tonight as we record on Thanksgiving Eve. And I hope wherever you guys are, whatever you guys do this weekend, that you have a great time with family. Enjoy whatever food. Hey, have some fun with the food. Eat whatever you want to eat. Just go out and have a workout. Go play a turkey bowl or whatever. Tomorrow we're going to go throw the football around or just go for a walk, whatever it is. And don't feel guilty about it. Enjoy the food and just do a little something on top of it before you buckle in. Because let me tell you, it's already happening, okay? And football's got 7 weeks of the regular season left. And we've got the postseason, of course. So our pro football. So with the NFL, we're okay for now. But believe me, in the back of my mind, once Thanksgiving hits, I start thinking, man, it's already almost over, especially college. Like, this is the last regular season week of college football. Then we've got the conference championship games next weekend. And then it's bowl games, and that's it. I mean, I love it so much. Like, there's no other sport like football. It's not the only sport I love. I love hockey. I love baseball. I love horse racing. I love golf. I'm all the sports. I'm not one of these one sport people, but I don't sit around thinking, oh man, I can't wait for baseball season when it's not baseball season, because it's always baseball season, and they play 5,000 games. I don't sit around thinking, oh man, hockey season. Hockey's off season lasts like 15 seconds, and they're already playing again. So I guess part of what makes the sport great with football is the scarcity. Although I think the sport itself is the main reason, but the way it's played once a week, the way it's only played for a few months of the year. I mean, college football just started 5 seconds ago, it feels like. And here we are at the end of the season. I'm already thinking about it. It's already in the back of my mind. Oh, this is it. And the Gators haven't even given us that much fun this season. If you're a Gator fan, FSU, it's been a little bit better. But the point is, appreciate every minute. This is a great sports weekend. I mean, even if you're not a soccer fan, but if you are interested in the World Cup at all, you've got that on top of all the football. And then the Lightning you're going to, revel in it, man. Because it goes by so fast, and pretty soon it'll be the off season again, and we'll be begging for the 2023 season. But I get too far ahead of myself. We still got plenty of football left. And so in the meantime, if you're looking, we got Christmas coming up. Not that cars are Christmas gifts. In fact, I hate those commercials that where the rich people buy like brand new cars for $50,000 as Christmas gifts. But if you're in the market, whether it's brand new, whether it's pre-owned, whether it's car, truck, or van, check out Bill Curry Ford. Website first, BillCurryFord.com. It's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. And you can see all the inventory, completely transparent, no haggle online pricing. It's right there. There's even more if you go in person to the lot a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Sean Sullivan, my good friend, the GM, enjoyed watching. I get to watch the game at the watch party at Big Storm Brewery with, of course, the Joes and, of course, the Sage, Ira Kaufman, and Sean Sullivan. We had a great time and had a good little breakfast and everything. It was fun. So go see him. Remember, every car, truck, van, new or pre-owned, whatever it is that you get, It's all under the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty. So as long as you buy a car at Bill Curry Ford, as long as you still own it, you're covered for engine trouble, period. No questions asked. Check them out. BillCurryFord.com is the website. Remember, it's C-U-R-R-I-E. With all that said, don't want to take up too much of your time. If you're trying to listen to a podcast, you shouldn't have to spend too much time on it on a holiday weekend. So let's all get back to having fun with the family. Let's get ready for Sunday. We got seven straight weekends now of Buccaneer football. We got a 5-5 football team. And if you, we're going to start looking at the playoff picture more as we get closer now, but it's starting to take a little bit of shape. And basically with the Bucs, it's not even complicated because it's not about a wild card. It's about winning the NFC South, where you could be the 4 or potentially the 3 seed. I mean, I like it. The Bucs, you know, if they were to go 6-1 or 5-2 in their final 7, that may be good enough for a 3. San Francisco, everybody, you know, is not in first place, by the way, yet in the NFC West, but everybody is pretty much presumed they're going to be the NFC West champions now. Bucks are a game behind Seattle, and they have that tiebreaker from the win in Germany. It may not even matter. I mean, see, everybody thinks San Francisco is going to win the division. Of course, the Vikings look a little more vulnerable now. Dallas looks really good. Bucks have a tiebreaker over them. There's a lot of stuff that could still happen. But right now, the Bucks need to keep their head down and do what it takes to win the NFC South. And if they are as good as we think they can be, you go up to places like Cleveland against teams like the 3-7 Browns, and you get the job done no matter what the weather's like and no matter what you have to do. And you come home 6-5, and then you get ready for more. The Bucs are on Monday Night Football the week after this against the Saints. They need to be 6-5 going into that game. So we will see as we approach Sunday. In the meantime, again, have a great holiday. Thanks all of you for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time. It's an honor and a privilege. And thanks to the Joes for giving me that honor and privilege to be on this website, joebucksfan.com, the best place anywhere for Bucs coverage. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford as well. But again, most of all, thanks to you guys. And give thanks for everything you have in life, whatever it is. We'll be back next week. Hopefully we're talking about a 6-5 Bucs team by then, but let's go have some fun on Sunday with the Bucs and the Browns. And until then, enjoy the holiday weekend, enjoy the food, play some football, or just generally hang out and have fun with your family, wherever you are, or whoever you do it with. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, happy Thanksgiving, and go Bucs. To stay.